Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome to the Ramblecast. We have a very special seasonal episode for you today. We are providing our Christmas wish list to the games industry. Joining me today are Jerry.
Hello.
And Wesley.
Hello.
All right, now, we have been absent for a little while. There's so many different reasons for that, but you really don't care. Hopefully, we're going to be getting a little bit more regular into the new year, you know, New Year's resolutions, but that'll be next episode. For now, again, we're just doing our little Christmas wish list for the industry, which is we compiled a list to see what kind of stuff we want to see out of the games industry, you know, either soon, next year, whichever. It's just these things would delight us greatly. So without wasting any time, I'm going to start off with Death to the Ubisoft Open World AAA Formula, which is my wish, and kind of rolls into one of Wesley's, which is to follow the Dragon Age Inquisition release model. Basically what I mean is I'm kind of sick of seeing a new Assassin's Creed every year, and this year we actually have two new Assassin's Creed games, one of which is evidently kind of broken now that it was released, and I haven't heard anything when it comes to Assassin's Creed Rogue, but you've got that. Watch Dogs followed the exact same formula. I know everyone's saying great things about Far Cry 4, but honestly, I played Far Cry 3 and I was doing the same damn stuff I was doing in Assassin's Creed, climbing towers to access the map, doing little side quests and everything, and it's all there to pad time.
The new racing game that they just came out with follows the same formula. It actually has towers in it. You just have to drive up to them, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Seriously, wow. A driving game. They put towers in it.
Well, you'd think they'd implement some kind of crazy motorcycle stunt up the side of the tower or something so you could still climb it.
I'd kind of get behind, but yeah, no, you have to like follow a ping to find where the tower is. That's the bit that takes the time, and then you just drive up to it, and it's like, congratulations, here's a bunch of side missions that pop up that you found suddenly.
And the thing is, does this stuff actually sound fun? Does it sound fun to find, like, for Assassin's Creed, it makes sense, because the whole the game is built around climbing. Therefore, climbing a tower, trying to figure out the right path up it, in order to get to the top, get everything, like, it makes sense there. Cry 3, it made it a little bit less sense, and partially because first-person platforming is more problematic. And honestly, climbing one tower wasn't much too different from climbing another.
No. I mean, they were all little puzzles, but they were all just find the optimal way to jump up the thing.
Yeah. And so this stuff doesn't belong in every one of their open world games, but they feel like there's a recipe for the biggest, best blockbuster. And I imagine Watch Dogs has something like it too. And it's just,
yes, it does.
It's a damn shame because they've really cut their support of the Nintendo Wii U. And I guarantee you what's going to happen is they've finally got Watch Dogs on the Wii U. It's not going to sell well because everyone's already heard the big criticisms about it. And dude, why would you buy Watch Dogs, which everyone says is okay, when there's Smash Brothers, a highly rated Bayonetta 2 coming out, and now a highly rated Captain Toad Treasure Tracker? Like, there's three games right there in the same season that Watch Dogs came out, and Ubisoft's probably going to be like, well, they don't want the hardcore games. There isn't a market for it. And just,
I've never understood. It's very weird because, like, okay, Ubisoft, they want to focus on open world games a lot. That, you know, okay, sure, whatever. I don't necessarily have a problem with that, though. As Assassin's Creed Unity showed this year, trying to do a massive open world game on a yearly schedule is maybe a little hard to achieve, even when you have like 5,000 studios working on it. I just don't understand the idea of, if they want to do open world games, that's fine, but I don't understand why they all have to be so similar to each other. Like, when Assassin's Creed was new, the whole climbing the tower thing, I actually didn't mind. I thought it was kind of cool, especially when you get the big effect at the top where it sort of pans around and shows you all the area. I was like, that's neat, but I don't know why they feel that their games will either be like unrecognizable or something if a variant of that is not in everything. Like, I don't know why they can't create their own unique formulas. Like, even on a per series basis, it would be better. Like, if every Assassin's Creed game had the towers, but maybe Far Cry didn't, then if it was a hallmark of a particular series, it would make more sense. But they're trying to have these core mechanical staples across, it seems to be just about everything they make. Like, I'm waiting for the next Rayman game to have towers in it somehow. And I just don't get the logic behind why they need to be that similar across the whole of all the different universes they make. I really can't think of a reason for it other than they want people to be able to look at something and say, oh, that's a Ubisoft game and I liked Assassin's Creed, so I'll probably like this too. But it seems like that seems a bad reason to do it, if you ask me.
I think part of it is probably they are trying to produce these games so quickly and with such a large team that it may be just easier. Like, a game design discussion on that, right, like, isn't a big deal. It's like, okay, well, we already know these seven things we're doing in all these games. We just sort of changed them a little bit for our game series. And it's, you know,
cuts the tech down is there. Work. We have the mechanics already. Yeah. Nothing new has to be designed.
Maybe it's not optimal, but it works.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, part of it is probably just trying to save money on making these different games, and I think part of it is also just trying to be risk averse. They knew it worked for Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed still sells enough copies. I mean, it's the same reason Activision keeps making Call of Duty games. I mean, why stop making, you know, something? Why get rid of the chicken that keeps hatching golden eggs or something, laying golden eggs? Or goose. I don't know. However that metaphor
apparently
works.
And apparently there hasn't been an actual number, but apparently Assassin's Creed Unity is still selling reasonably well, despite the fact that it was a complete technical disaster and kind of still is.
Because video games. You know, I mean, that's how the consumer market works. But and that's part of the problem is it needs to be something that eventually the audience needs to stop. Actually buying the games at some point. And it's funny because I feel like after Assassin's Creed 3, people might have been a lot less willing to jump right into Unity, except for Black Flag, which might as well have been a brand new property. They could have just made it Black Flag, brand new game about pirates.
Yeah. And I think if Unity had followed 3, I think the series would have been in a much more of a bad way. Like, Black Flag really kind of reinvigorated. I know, as someone who's played all that entire series, like, Black Flag sort of reinvigorated me towards it. Yeah. And then Unity came out, and everyone was kind of like, where's all the cool stuff you gave us last time? And it's funny enough, Rogue, from what I understand, is basically Black Flag 2. Apparently that's the better one to play, because it's got all the pirate stuff and everything you liked from the last game. It's just more of it.
And that's the funny thing, because I actually know a lot of people that did go up to the next generation did get rid of their previous systems. Not everyone. I mean, this is also, like, you can't exactly prove it kind of a thing. Like, I don't have any numbers for how many people kept their old systems, how many people are getting rid of them now that they're upgrading to the next generation. But if you did ditch your system, because it does, your old system, despite the lack of backwards compatibility, then technically, the Assassin's Creed sequel you wanted is now just gone. You cannot play it. You cannot access that game.
I have a sneaking suspicion, because this is Ubisoft, that sometime around next spring we're going to see them go, hey, Rogue HD is now coming out to the new things, because it is coming to PC in the spring. They did say that, so I wouldn't
Rogue
be surprised
Swashbuckler
if they
edition or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a next-gen version of that come out just to sort of pad things out a bit. Because if they made it and all they got to do is turn the res knob up a little bit, then why not, right? But I really think the biggest solution to that, ultimately the solution to this problem is, and I don't know, maybe Unity will give them enough of a kick in the teeth that they'll make this decision from a business standpoint. But the real problem is, I mean, we've already touched on it, these massive open world games are annualized, and maybe they shouldn't be, because they just clearly a year's time between them. And yeah, it's like Call of Duty, where they have like two or three of them in development at once and they kind of trade off primary teams and stuff. But I think the main thing is just that you can't do a game that big annually or even every 2 years or something like that. I think they really just either need to take a year, you know, to take a year off or whatever, and give the team some creative room to sort of get their heads and figure out new stuff to do. And I'm sure they could. They have some of the best developers in the world working there. I think they just need the time. But in an industry this risk averse, are they going to do that? I don't know.
I think it is also important to note that with Black Flag, I mean, the reason that it sold a lot was the only thing people really liked about Assassin's Creed 3 was the ship sailing section, which was completely different than anything else in an Assassin's Creed game before. So Black Flag promised more of that, and they really did build on that angle, which is one of the reasons I feel like it could have been a brand new intellectual property. Meanwhile, more games are using the other aspects of what makes Assassin's Creed what it is. The open worldness, the go climb a tower to access more of the map, to do these little tiny side quests all across. And I think players will eventually get burnt out on that. So yeah, a lot of them still bought Unity, but at some point I feel like they're going to stop. Hopefully.
Yeah, I do think it may take a while, but I do think that's happening. Like, they've been talking about, I saw a thing yesterday, actually. I don't remember what it was, but I saw something yesterday that basically said that, you know, despite the fact that the new Call of Duty game that came out this year is the one that a lot of people, actually myself included, were saying, hey, they finally improved Call of Duty and made it a fair bit better, like that it's sales of that series are down like 27% year over year or something like that. So it kind of seems like people are starting to burn out on that series. And I think with this, it's going to happen eventually too. They're going to have to either slow it down or they'll just, yeah, oversaturate it and people will just be like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I really like Assassin's Creed. I've played all of them and I probably will play Unity at some point when they get it working. But, yeah, as well, I'm also one of the first people to say that series really needs some time off just to get its head.
Now, as I said, now kind of rolling in with this is, Wesley, one of the things you mentioned when we were discussing this topic was the Dragon Age Inquisition release model, which doesn't exactly sound like a release model at all. It just sounds like releasing a game.
Yeah, so one of the things I hate about the Ubisoft games right now, I hear it's really bad with the crew, actually. From what I've read, all like the pre-order bonuses, exclusive DLC, stuff like that, that all the games are going towards now.
Microtransactions.
Microtransactions in the case of, I believe, The Crew.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I like about Dragon Age Inquisition is that all they had was they had one set of pre-order DLC, which were some weapons in the game. But other than that, like, that was it. Like, everybody who pre-ordered got those weapons. And then there wasn't retailer-specific stuff. There wasn't day one downloadable stuff. Like, it was just the game. And then some extra weapons if you bought it early. And I really like that.
So what you're saying is you want the Nintendo method of release day schedule.
Yes. And also, like, as we've been discussing this, I didn't think of this originally, but the Dragon Age model, or what BioWare has done with it, so they actually got kicked in the teeth when they did Dragon Age 2. Because they did do it too quickly, they didn't have as much content, they were reusing a lot of assets, sort of like what Ubisoft does now, and yep. They've really turned it around with this one. Like, it was in several years of development, and it's a huge game that actually works, and that's pretty impressive.
And honestly, I would have rather this myself, because this is exactly what I was kind of looking for, like that gap where they kind of really rebuilt the game for a big, expansive sequel. And again, though, I mean, it is kind of funny, because also consider when Dragon Age Origins released, the big controversy at the time was the guy in your camp that sits there, and if you don't have the DLC, he's like, by the way, you go and you buy this DLC, we can go on an adventure.
And the purchase prompt was in the conversation.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I remember that. It was great. Like, complete breaking the wall and everything.
All right, but we do have to move on, but this still, again, this continues to go into, speaking of Assassin's Creed Unity, of course, Wesley, one of yours was the willingness to release a game late so it can be functional at launch.
This is actually so perfectly timed, so I didn't know this when I made my list, but recently The Witcher 3 got delayed, and so the reason it got delayed was, according to its developer, was that they didn't have time to make it work. So they were delaying it instead of shipping a broken product. And they actually have a quote
here. What a novel
here.
Concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a quote from one of the members of the board, it looks like, at CD Projekt, where it's, "The market is afraid of badly polished games on next gen. People are very skittish about it." And so it's good to see a developer learning some lessons from that and taking the time that is necessary to release a good product.
Yep, because let's face it, both with the 360 and PS3, and then when you go back to the PS2 and Xbox, all those generations of games, they were very notorious for having launch titles that were either very, very lacking in content because of the sudden upgrade in graphics and visuals, or were very, very buggy, or both. So now that now it actually is, it does seem like a lot of studios kind of want to try and improve on that aspect of game development. And for, yeah, I mean, it's like what Shigeru Miyamoto once said, you know, a delayed game will eventually be good. A release, an early game, you know, that's broken or whatever, like I'm paraphrasing here, will be, you know, bad forever kind of a thing.
Yeah. I hope that as we see games, I feel like as we move forward, games are getting out of that, like, last 3 months of the year has to be when we release our big games. And I think an important step towards getting it to where they're more likely to delay games, because for some games, like, that are dead set on that last 3 months, if they don't release in those 3 months, they're out for another year, I guess.
Well, specifically, like it's more like October and November with some September, because almost nobody releases in December. Usually,
so,
only
those 2 months, I guess.
Pre U.S. Thanksgiving, basically.
Yeah, before U.S. Thanksgiving, with only Nintendo usually releasing a game in December, but it's usually not a game that a lot of, like, it's more of a smaller niche game. They usually don't release their big release, like, their biggest hit is usually the week before Black Friday.
Yeah.
That's the typical.
I think the biggest problem, honestly, that comes down to a lot of this stuff where games get broken because they have to hit a ship date is, I think, and a lot of people have said this for years, the industry announces games too early because they want to keep the hype train going as long as they can, but they release a game, or rather, they don't release a game, they announce when a game is going to come out before they really know if they can hit it. They figure they can just make their teams crunch hard enough and they'll hit it. And I think that's the case. That's the thing a lot of times. I personally think they should wait until much closer to when the game is done and they're reasonably confident of when they can hit their target to say, okay, this is when it's going to come out. Because that's kind of what CD Projekt said, is they said, you know, we announced this game way too early and we should have waited much longer because we would have had a better idea of when it was going to come out. And because once you put that date out there, you're either stuck with getting to it or disappointing people. You're either stuck with getting to it and releasing a bad product, or disappointing people and wasting tons of marketing money when you miss it. And I think if they announced it much closer, it'd be easier for them to do that.
I kind of call bullcrap, because remember, at the same time, Arkham Knight was originally announced for this year. They're still marketing that, though, even though it was delayed to, what, the summer? It's like now June of 2015 instead of this holiday, which is the original announce date. I think, you know, people kind of, I mean, and it also depends on how old you are. Like, I think most adult gamers, whether you're in your 20s or older, have seen enough broken games released that when they see a delay, or even they're just trying to play so many games that they see that delay and they're kind of like, good. You know, I mean, sure, they'd like to get their hands on it earlier, but I think the market is becoming mature enough at this point that people understand a delay doesn't always mean bad news. Even though, yes, you will have the asshole in the comments section saying, oh, if they're delaying it, maybe it's not going to be that good. Yeah, that asshole's a troll and he's barely there anymore.
The biggest thing, honestly, is I don't even think it's about fans being disappointed, which is why they do it. The sad reality is that most of these big publishers are public companies and they have to get certain numbers of big name games out in certain quarters to hit the numbers that they want, and delaying a title if it crosses a financial quarter line can totally screw up their finances for a year. And yeah, investors don't give a crap about the reasons why a game comes out or doesn't come out. They just want it to come out and make a certain amount of money. And if it's broken, they don't really care. And I think that's a big part of it. Is funny enough, CD Projekt actually is a public company, but they're structured in such a way that they do that, and they're just like, I think their investors understand, well, if we piss off our fans, we have nothing left and we're kind of screwed. Whereas somebody like Ubisoft or EA or anything like that, I think they have less freedom to do that. I don't think it's a good reason. I just think it maybe is a reason why that happens.
Maybe, but I know there are enough more public companies that don't cater to that necessarily, but I do think in some cases people are a little too eager to roll out teasers for some games, but for the most part, I think it really varies from company to company whether something gets announced real early or not, because some games, they announce it and it's coming out that fall and it's been in development already, and then other games, it's like it'll be announced, it's like coming several years from Mass Effect 3, for example. Mass Effect 4. My bad, Mass Effect 4. It's like everyone knows Mass Effect 4 is coming. We just don't
They're like, it's
know
coming
when.
Someday.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's technically not a bad thing to have, but it's like, okay, I mean, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for... And that's the thing. Like, what they're doing is they're generating regular buzz, which, let's face it, even if you delay a game, your marketing's still going to be constantly coming out with buzz. You want people to keep... So even announcing a delay is a chance for people to know, oh, here's a game that I might want to buy. So...
Yeah, it might be... I can only speak for myself when I say that I'd rather just not hear about a game until it's closer to release than when I so they can take all the time they need to get it right. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I don't really care if we go years and years without a new Mass Effect if it means that the new one is really, really good. But, you know, I can only speak for myself. I know if everyone thought that way, then I think things would probably be done differently. So
can you imagine how much hype there would be? If they didn't announce the new Call of Duty until about middle of October. So everybody would know, they're like, they're going to release a Call of Duty this year, right? But there's just no official announcements, no official statements, like no comments on all questions. And then the third week of October, boom, everything hits on a Wednesday or something, and the internet would explode.
That would be ballsy as hell. I'd love to see that.
It would be ballsy.
No. You know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for them to have a Call of Duty with Nicolas Cage in it or something. That's what I'm waiting for.
They had Kevin Spacey this year.
Exactly.
Cage's next.
And it was pretty good,
gotta,
actually.
Exactly. You gotta go one next step beyond crazy, man. You gotta go Nicolas Cage.
I'd play a Call of Duty with Nicolas Cage in it.
Alright, we've barely scratched the surface of this list, so we gotta keep going. Jerry, you had an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Yours was essentially, you kind of wanted mechanics first, story second, in a way. I think I rolled two of your ideas into one here.
Yeah, I can kind of explain it a little bit. Basically, the idea was that the way it reads in our little list here kind of makes it sound like I want less games that have much story focus in them at all, which isn't necessarily true. I really like games that do story really well. A couple of my favorite games of all time are ones that you could probably say are centered around their story more than anything else. But I guess, and this partially comes from the fact that I grew up on the sort of original, a lot of the original video games and systems where games that came out maybe had a story, maybe not, but and it wasn't really the point. Things that you can think of this like a lot of arcade games, for example, were like this, where the idea was the sort of gameplay and the mechanical design of how the games worked, and then they either didn't have a story, or if they did, it was kind of a secondary thing that was there to sort of, you know, justify the levels you were going through, but that was kind of it. And I really do like story-heavy games, but one thing I'd like to see, I guess, more of thrown into the mix is more games of that nature where it's really not about, it doesn't really care to tell you a story. It's just like you could to use more modern examples, you could say something like games like, say, Geometry Wars or something like that. There's no story to those games. They're just they designed a set of systems and mechanics and went, here it is, your goal is just to get a high score, go. And I like stuff like that sometimes. I think you could argue that there's a lot of games of that nature that exist in the mobile space now. I think that's where you can find a lot of that stuff for sure. But I'd like to see more stuff like that done on a console sort of, larger graphical scale, things like that. I've just always been a fan of that stuff. And yeah, stuff that's driven mostly around mechanics first, I think would be kind of interesting. There's not enough of that.
Yeah, I think what I grabbed out of it for the most part was, like, there's a lot of indie darlings that are well known because they have an interesting kind of story or aesthetic to the story atmosphere. But when it comes to the gameplay, and I don't mean just in regards to walking simulators or something. I mean, just in regards to games where there's not much substantial mechanically. Like, there's, like, you play it once and you've witnessed a story, but it's like, is there a reason this was interactive? Like, did it really need me to interact with it in order to make an impact kind of a thing? And some games, yes, they do. That interaction aspect really does help deliver on the story. In other ones, they don't. And I think my favorite joke this year was when I first heard about this game. What is it, The Mountain?
Mountain, yeah.
And, like, what I'm still not sure I understand, because it sounds like it's just, you sit there and you watch a mountain, and sometimes the climate changes and other things, but you don't really interact with it. Is that how it is?
Yeah, I haven't touched it, but from what I've heard of it, it's kind of more of an interactive art piece more than anything else. It's not really, it's just kind of a thing that's there, and you kind of take from it what you will, I guess.
And that's the thing. I haven't exactly gotten a solid idea of what it is.
And I think just that's the kind of thing. It's very hard to describe.
But my favorite tag on Steam for it was Uninstall Simulator 2014. That was my favorite.
Oh, man. Yeah. But, I mean, I have no, you know, all that, and I guess to a certain degree what I'm looking to see more of, because that stuff's fine, you know, whatever. That stuff can exist. There's a lot of people who actually enjoy that stuff, so that's cool. But what I kind of would like to see more of is, I guess really you could say the opposite of that. Like, that stuff is, some of that stuff is extremely story heavy to the point where it doesn't have a lot of mechanics because the story is the point. I guess what I'd like to see more of is really the opposite of that, where it's all about the mechanical stuff and story is either kind of a secondary concern or just not there at all. And that kind of stuff I think would be interesting. It's just kind of a different idea on how to approach that stuff. And there is some more of that stuff coming out now. There are some indie titles coming out that are more in that vein. I'd like to see more of that. I think that'd be cool.
Meanwhile, I think I'm of mixed bag in that regard, because I want both to be solid. I want both gameplay and mechanics, and then the story, all of them to be solid, to work together. I think for the most part, when it comes to a video game, it's more important that the mechanics work over the story. But at the same time, I mean, as I'm sure you've watched the Remember Me video I just put out, liked the gameplay, but I can't get over the story now. I cannot, like, now that I've actually tried to analyze it in depth, I can't get over that. And that actually really does make the game worse to me. Like, I would be replaying that game constantly if the story were any good, or if at least it measured up to its potential. But because they made so many screw-ups to the point that it's terrible, I can't do it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, Remember Me is an interesting case study for some of that stuff, because there are people who liked the story a lot and people who didn't, and people who thought the mechanics were good and not. That game's actually very interesting in that regard. It's very divisive in that way.
It is a divisive game. But next up, we have an item from my wish list. For the Game Awards, to at least wait until the end of, that's supposed to be December. I wrote down November, which is basically what they do. But no, for the Game Awards, to at least wait until the end of December. Because, no joke, this year I was like, I haven't heard anything about the Game Awards yet. I wonder when they're starting. Oh, they happened yesterday. And this was last Saturday, which would be Saturday, December 6th. So, in other words, the Game Awards happened the day Captain Toad Treasure Tracker came out. So, to me, at the very least, especially for if there's ever community vote stuff, have them wait until the end of the stinking month. But otherwise, I mean, normally I might have all kinds of other complaints here about how to improve them, but they didn't do too bad this year. I still have thoughts towards them, but
It's an improvement.
That's what I've heard.
A giant step forward is what they did. Yeah. It was great.
I didn't watch any of it. I was doing something else that day, but I've heard plenty of discussion on them, and that is the one thing that everybody said is they're like, it still has somewhere to go, but compared to when it was on Spike, holy crap, was it better. And yeah. I think they should do it, and I understand this. I think some of this is centered around the game industry's obsession with the holiday season, like we talked about before. But honestly, the best time to do this, I think, would be like, yeah, in early spring or something during the drought period when there's nothing, like everybody's played everything from the previous year. There's a whole ton to talk about, and all the hype they built up for, like, a lot of the world exclusive stuff they talked about, from what I understood, is stuff that's like not due out until late next year anyway. So even if they did it in the spring, they still have lots of time to build on that hype, right? I don't know. I think it would be better then.
I do think part of the reason is Jeff Keighley himself last year, said that he doesn't believe gamers are very nostalgic, kind of a funny statement, in that they're more thinking about what's ahead than what they've left behind. So they don't want to spend too much time thinking about what they've played, which I find not only fundamentally wrong, but even if it is true, then feeding that is kind of encouraging a bad level of consumerism. So I think that aspect is still more Jeff Keighley over them being attached to Spike. And that's one area I kind of fundamentally disagree with. But otherwise, again, it was good. And yeah, I'd like them to at least wait until the end of December, if not occur sometime in January, when 2014 is all said and done. Because like, I know, like, of course, the press already had Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, already played it, but it would still be nice to have the audience kind of caught up in that regard. And you're right, it kind of would be better to wait until after Christmas to start saying, hey, by the way, here's what's coming in 2015, rather than saying, tis the season to want what you don't have until next year. And
yeah. I think it just and like you said, when Jeff Keighley was saying, yeah, people are interested in what's coming, not what's happened before, I don't necessarily think he gives gamers enough credit for that on that front. But even if it's true, kind of like you said, I don't necessarily think that's an excuse to just keep feeding into that. Like, for someone who is has heavily invested in games and gaming culture as he is, it would be kind of good if he thinks that's a problem, that we don't focus enough on what's already happened. I think he could form more of this around doing that and maybe trying to change that perception, especially when he was funding it himself and doing it all online, where, you know, they made this point on the Giant Bombcaster, like, it's not like they were pressed for time or they said, you have a window of this many hours you have to fill or cut stuff in order to make sure it's filled properly. It's online. The show can be as long or as short as he wants. So I think it would be interesting if he would focus it more on that.
I'll admit, at 3 hours, I was kind of... I didn't even watch the whole thing. I couldn't watch the
whole
thing.
That is long.
Oh, so that's it got halfway through, an hour and a half. Like, they, like, announced on the show that it was halfway through, like, going into a commercial break or something. They were, like, almost ready for the second half or whatever. And I was like, what? Huh? It feels like it's been going on forever.
That's the thing. I actually, like, I had to stop there because it's like, I can't watch this by myself. I have to have someone else here to talk it through. So next year I will be, once November starts, I'll be sitting there. When are the Game Awards? Because we're gonna gather up and we're gonna watch them together. Solidarity, brothers. And, you know,
that'll be interesting.
That way we can actually talk during it too.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I do think a better placement for time-wise would help it its impact a lot more.
All right, moving on to the next is another item for Wesley, and kind of me. I technically agree, but I think for different reasons. A game like Destiny, but not Destiny.
Okay. So yes. Destiny is amazing. Destiny is awesome. Destiny is extremely ambitious as a project. Destiny sort of sucks at the same time.
Word.
Like, it does all those things great, but it still sucks. Like, I think Destiny did a lot of things that I've wanted to see in console games and shooters for a while, with the progression system, with the community aspects. I thought it was really good, sort of bringing some of those MMO tropes over into the shooting genre and still maintaining that good FPS mechanics that just feel right. But at the same time, like, Bungie just made a lot of mistakes with, you know, simple things like the loot and the end game. I hate the 20 to 30 progression and how they did that. And then also, like, I'm not a huge fan of how they're handling DLC and stuff like that. Like, I really just think I loved the game and I loved sort of what they were going for. It's just I felt like they made too many mistakes to they didn't stick the landing. I guess they just did not stick it. And so when I look to the future, like, there's games like The Division, which, you know, I was really hopeful for coming out of E3, but then we've been talking about Ubisoft games, and I know I'm going to be turning on cell towers in The Division. I just know it. You're going to pull out some device, you're going to hook it up to the cell tower, and suddenly you're going to see more of the map. I would almost put money on that, actually.
Yeah. So, God, I hope you're wrong, but you're probably not.
Yeah, oh, so, it's an open world game by Ubisoft. It's going to have all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
It's going to have all of it.
I just hope that things, that games moving forward learn some of the stuff from Destiny and they extract the good and leave behind the bad. Maybe Destiny will do it. Maybe Destiny 2 will be better.
I feel very much like you do. Like, if there was an award this year for, like, most confounding game of the year, I think Destiny would probably be it, because I've been meaning to write a late review of that game for my blog for forever, because it's a game that, yeah, like you, there is so much about that game that really pissed me off, and yet I played a ton of it and did enjoy when I played it, and at the same time I was also like, but all of these things are terrible, and it's... I can't remember the last time I had a game played something that had that kind of impact on me. It's very weird.
See, that's the funny thing is, to me, it's like, well, what matters to me most in this game? And for me, Destiny, all the stuff that pisses a lot of people off, I'm like, eh, it could be better, but I'm still having fun shooting guys in the head. So
yeah,
I'm good. And granted, though, I'm also partially due to financial situation, I did not purchase the DLC. So whatever's going on with the DLC, I don't really know. I haven't actually picked up Destiny in quite a few weeks now. I might jump back into it just to shoot some stuff.
Yeah, one of my problems actually with it, I didn't buy the DLC either. I was going to, and then I just didn't. But the way they're handling the release and how it makes a lot of the other content, it's an MMO model, right? When they release a WoW expansion, nobody goes back to that old stuff except for to run through it to get to the new stuff. So there's not as much reason to go through the older content, and a lot of the items and stuff that you spent a long time trying to get are now worthless. So
worthless?
Yeah, like the armor and stuff that you had before. Like, so the only way to get to 30 before the DLC was to run the raid to get raid gear to then upgrade. Well, now you can just buy gear that will get you to 30 at the shop. So instead of having to run the raid 7 or 8 times to get the gear required, you can just go buy it for one of the 29,000 currencies in that game.
That's one. That's a very, you're right, that's a very WoW expansion-like tactic.
Yeah, and I understand that, and it's well-established in the game industry. I just don't like it.
I can understand not liking that either. Because that's the thing. Like, I think my character's, what, level 20, 27, 28, 29? I can't remember. One of those. It's close-ish to 30, but not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And I've never done the raid yet. I've never actually hit Vault of Glass. My friends could never gather enough people. Never got a time to try it. And that group isn't exactly going to be happening anytime soon for horrible, stupid reasons. But that's the thing. Even then, I still feel like I came back from Destiny satisfied, and I'll still go back and play again. I do think that the MMO aspects to it really do hamper a lot of people's expectations or desires for when they play the game. Because, again, like, for me, the combat is the game. And the post-game stuff, I feel like, was preparing me for how you truly play the game. And essentially what missing out on Vault of Glass does is I have not played the most difficult mode of Destiny, basically. Which is, like, I have not played whatever is harder than Legendary and Halo. I mean, that's the way I basically view it. So I don't feel like I'm necessarily losing out. I do want to play it, but what I have, I've experienced Destiny in its base level where you don't really have to learn its combat too well. In its more difficult modes, I've played it solo, I've played it co-op, and honestly, I absolutely love what I've played. It could be better, but for what I want out of the game, I am completely fine with it. So when you say a game like Destiny but not Destiny, I think of like how people were saying DragonsDogmaOnline.com or something was recently registered, and instead of an MMO, I want them to take Dragon's Dogma and give it a little bit of the multiplayer aspect that you got out of Destiny, so it plays like that in a fantasy world. So there are all these people wandering around, so there are all these people that exist, but you're free to either play solo or to gather friends to co-op with.
Dark Souls in Online. Dark Souls Online, please.
Actually, that's the funny thing. Until the Game Awards and trying to catch up to it when they showed Bloodborne gameplay, mm-hmm. I was not interested in that because Dark Souls, I would be a lot happier with it with co-op. Bloodborne has proper co-op, it looks like.
Yeah.
So now I'm interested in that. So I might actually be playing that with you, Wesley, when I finally eventually get a PS4. All right. Let's move on. We are technically... We only just got to the halfway point of the list, and we are so close to the end of the episode, technically.
Some of these will be quicker anyway, I think, but...
Yeah. Higher standards for games writers and journalists. I think we all had something in this regard. And it's a shame, because I've been so busy with certain projects I've been working on, I haven't been able to really continue some of the items I've been doing on my blog, one of which being Let's Talk Games Writing. Because I have a few articles that I'm working on that I want to talk about. Because honestly, games writing in general needs to improve. Just how people approach reviews, how people approach previews, how people approach editorials. We just need better standards in writing, constructing an argument, and how we analyze games. Now, I imagine because of a bunch of the drama and other crap that happened this year, there's other things that we could touch on as well. I think, Jerry, you mentioned some of that. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, we do want... And outside of, you know, the hashtag that shall not be named, like, let's disregard that for a minute. Let's disregard the entire discussion about ethics. It's just about quality writers doing their job, treating it as a job rather than treating it as a blog.
Yeah, and I mean, really, that's more what I was going to refer to is I think a lot of it is just I just like to see more. For me personally, it's not even disregarding the term standards. Even I just like to see, and I know that this is a problem in the razor thin margin industry of writing about games, but I just like to see more. Sort of a variance of coverage and stuff, not the usual sort of news reviews, previews, interviews type thing. I'd like to see, you could call it feature level writing, I guess, stuff of that nature, but just more, sort of analysis type things of a lot of varieties of different topics. Stuff get maybe digging into sort of the behind the scenes business side of the industry a little more, which I know is hard given that the industry is so secretive. But just things like that, just to see games talked about in a greater variety of ways than just the sort of standard formula that we've come to know. And I don't know, maybe with the games writing industry in the condition it's in, maybe that's not something that's viable. You know, one of the things I used to really like from Polygon was a lot of the features they did, and they still do them, but they do them a lot less now. And I believe it was said by somebody from there a while ago that the main reason for that is that they take a lot of time and money to make, and they don't get nearly the traffic of the day-to-day stuff. And that's a problem I don't know how you solve, but I'd like someone to figure it out, someone who's smarter than me, which is most people.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings towards that as well, because in some ways I feel like, again, I feel like it's an Ouroboros, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. People have been trained to expect something from games journalism, and therefore the vast market is good. Like, if you make your living off of nothing but news and announcements and stuff, then most people are going to come to your website with no greater expectations than to find that. And anything that's even longer people aren't going to give a crap. But I also think the audiences may simply be somewhere else, because I know a lot of people, like, there's a lot of really long articles on US Gamer, for example. A lot of really long ones. And a lot of, they're able to make it. They're able to manage it. They got a lot of editorials, a lot of long features, and yet they manage. They get by. So maybe it's how they're running Polygon versus how they're running US Gamer or something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
And of course, I think also rolling in is, I think part of the issue with me as well is a lot of games writers out there are in a rush for games to grow up in a way that reminds me of a child wanting to pretend they're an adult. You want to be an adult so people can stop treating you like a child, but the manner in which you do it is childish and immature, and therefore you are only proving you are not ready to be treated like a grown-up. Games writing, like, and I've said it before, like, I was right alongside them. Walking Dead, first season of Telltale's Walking Dead, great story, very impactful. Again, another thing I have a Ramble Pack video that's very positive about. I'm pretty sure, honestly, we should not have rewarded Telltale with Game of the Year, because how many platforms is their engine on, and it doesn't work on any of them? It's broken on every single one. Yes. Every time a new episode of any of their games comes out, people are talking about save bugs, glitches, this, that. The PS3 version of Walking Dead Season 1 still has an annoying-ass bug on the train in one of the episodes. Happened the first time I played it. Happened this past time I played it, what, like 1-2 years later? It's still there. They need... And, of course, I watched my roommate this year playing Poker Night at the Inventory. That game was bugged as hell. Telltale needs to stop taking on so many licensed projects. They need to fix their frickin' engine. They need to make sure it operates. That, or dedicate more time to hiring good programmers that can fix it rather than saying, it works good enough, let's push more content out the door. Because, yeah, great writing, but that is some glitchy stuff, and we should not be rewarding a company for releasing a broken product, even if aspects of it are exceptional.
Yeah, and Telltale, honestly, is a company that when if you want to roll it back into the whole discussion about broken products, yeah, like, I've railed against them and their ancient engine for a long time, but they do seem to have gotten away with it either because they're a smaller studio or because they had games like Walking Dead that were so impactful, and I do think that's a big problem. Like, they've been using the same engine since, like, their first game, and that engine's just tired. Like, it's time. They've got, like, an army of people there now, apparently. I think they just need to, basically scrap that and write something new to run their stuff in. And, unfortunately, we do see, you know, I do think there is a bit of a problem where either certain studios or properties do tend to get a bit more of, they do tend to get away with more than maybe certain other things do. And maybe that's not a thing you can, you know, I think that's probably an issue in most forms of media coverage. I don't know if that's something you really can do anything about at the end of the day, but yeah, it is, that is a problem as well.
All right. And now moving on, next on our list, is one of yours, Jerry. More Dark Souls-esque ideas in other genres, and I'm going to cut you off and say no, because I like being able to beat games, damn it.
Well, and that's the thing, that this isn't one that's really going to take that long to talk about, I don't think, but it's really that, I don't want to see anything get replaced by this necessarily, because I like the idea of Dark Souls, and I kind of got into it with Dark Souls 2, but I most certainly do not want all or even the majority of the games I play to be like that. But now we've started to see Dark Souls has been out and popular long enough that we've started to see some things like, for example, Lords of the Fallen this year, which was a game very clearly inspired by that idea. But it was another sort of medieval end of the world killing demons type thing, and that's fine, but I'd like to see if other companies are going to attempt to make Dark Souls-esque titles, I'd love to see a title with some of those underlying mechanical formulas and that done in like a sci-fi environment or even a modern day environment or something where you have like different types of weapons, different types of environments, enemies, things like that. I just like to see that done in something non-medieval. I think that would be, just for me personally, I think that would be kind of a neat thing to see.
All right. Yeah. Next one is actually really quick as well. Wesley, you wanted to see digital stores matching physical prices better, which I think is true for just about all of us. We would like to see, because every once in a while there'll be a game you can go to GameStop and buy for like, what, $20, and then it's still like 40 to 60 online.
Yeah, and this is like, especially, I brought it up because I made this list like 3 days after Black Friday and stuff, and so, Sony, I really want to give you my money on my PS4. Like, I just want to give you money. But when it's $20 more expensive for me to buy Diablo 3 on the PS4 digitally as compared to physical, like, you're going to have to give a cut to Walmart, man. Like, if you could just let me do it through you, you could get all of it. But it's just frustrating, especially coming from a primarily PC background where there's just, like, OMG sales all the time.
And when you get right down to this problem.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. When you get right down to it, here's the ridiculous thing is a lot of those companies are actually, when they do that with video games, it's kind of like clearing out stock. It's not about making money back. It's about getting stuff off the shelf so they don't have to stock it.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have to worry about that digitally. You're not going to lose money. You're just going to, so like the cheapest price I saw Evil Within and Wolfenstein the New Order for this Black Friday was $20 at Kmart, of all places. Then you can go on, like, if I went online and I could find those games for $15 digitally on Black Friday, dude, that would have, like, you don't lose anything because you're not packaging, you're not shipping, you're not making the full game's price, but shit ton of people are now buying that game that probably would have just been like, I'll wait for a price drop to $15. So you're just, you're getting it out there. Now word of mouth is going to spread.
And I hate physical things. Like, I hate having to switch discs and all that, like 90s stuff. So, like, I was actually really excited when the Xbox One was announced because they were going to do the thing where you register your game copy with Xbox Live and then you can download it from Xbox Live in the future. I would love that. I would love that. Just let me just install the game and then throw it away.
This is going to be a very long stretch for a very terrible joke, but can you actually name your Xbox, or do you have to call it Xbox?
I have no idea.
If you're using Kinect?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, if you're using Kinect. Because I just for all the Legend of Korra fans, just because of something you said, it's like, instead of saying Xbox, it'd be like, Julie, do the thing, and your Xbox just knows what to do.
That would actually be kind of cool, but...
I mean, I think that's another regular, and part of it I can understand because these game companies do still need to play nice with retailers because not everyone's buying digitally, but they're certainly trying to get customers to move on over.
Yeah, and I think they might just have to, they don't want to declare that war on retail, but I really think they're going to just maybe have to at some point because... Yeah, like PC, a lot of PC services kind of figured this out, and we're starting to see, at least we're starting to see more sales on the digital console stuff now. Like Sony is running sales on a fairly regular basis, and Xbox Live has done some too. Not to the degree that Steam does, but they're getting there. But yeah, that's been my biggest problem too. There's only been, I think the only full sort of big quote AAA, game I bought digitally on the new consoles was actually Ground Zeroes because they had it at one point on a crazy sale on PSN for like $19, which was $10 cheaper than retail. But almost everything else I bought this year, I bought on a disc because in some cases I got them pre-ordered from a retailer on a promotion cheaper than I could have bought the thing for digitally. And I'm just like, well, yeah, I'm going to do this. And in the case of some games that I burned out on, like Destiny, I was able to turn around and sell the disc and get some of my money back, which I can't do if I buy it online. So I think they might just have to, someone one day is going to have to pull the pin and declare war on retail, I think. But I don't know who's going to do it first.
All right. Now I'm going to cut to two ideas because they're both small and they both happen to belong to Wesley. The first one being Paradox Games to keep on trucking is one of your wishes, Wesley.
Yes, so I love Paradox Games, Europa Universalis, Crusader Kings, all those. Love it. I love their model where they, for years after release, two and a half years now for Crusader Kings, they release large content patches on a regular basis accompanied by a paid-for DLC that has additional features. It's a really cool method. it gives the games an extremely long life cycle, like an MMO level life cycle that's measured in years, and it's really fun and cool, and I hope they keep doing it.
All right, and the last one that was yours, Wesley, and should be short, was esports to see continued growth and improvement.
Yes, so I'm an esports fan. I watch all of it, League of Legends, StarCraft, Dota, all of it, and it's over the last year and a half or so, it's grown immensely. Like, there were 27 million viewers of the League of Legends World Championships this year. That's wow. Just the finals, and that's unique. That's not... Anyway, so it's cool. Like, they're getting bigger. They're getting more professional. They're treating their players better. Things like that. And I hope it continues to grow, because I think it's a really cool form of entertainment.
All right. Now, we have two more items on the wish list. Don't know if we're going to be able to do both of them, because they can both be talked for a long time. So I'll just do the one for now, and we'll see. Because technically, we should be closing up shop right about now. More effort into niche genres across multiple platforms. This was a condensed idea of something that everyone kind of said. For me, it's like right now we have a resurgence of horror games. You got Alien Isolation. The Evil Within is still a bit action-ish, but it is definitely more effort into being horror than before. And you got all these games on the PC that are much more horrifying than what you were getting in mainstream gaming for a while. I'd love to see that happen with hardcore action games. The closest you see right now is Nintendo is publishing Bayonetta 2, published, and they're publishing The Devil's Third, which is the new Tomonobu Itagaki game. But when you look at what's coming out for next generation, you're seeing horror games on the PS4, and you're seeing like the Dark Souls type games, and then you're seeing stuff on the Xbox One, but they're all kind of genres that we've been playing in great amount this past generation. But you don't have the tough as nails Devil May Cry style action game. You don't have you don't really have platformers anymore outside of the Mario games or the Rayman games. It would be nice to see some of these smaller genres also find a way to flourish, and I mean beyond just the indie scene, because again, like, you're seeing all kinds of horror games come out for the PS4 that are more than just little niche titles. They're not just little indie darlings or indie efforts like you're seeing with some platformers and stuff. So I'd like to see more full-on AAA efforts into these niche genres. Maybe, like, I guess you could call it, like, middle budget, like, so it's more AA instead of AAA, but just something that's a bit more than just what indie's going to give. Kind of like the polish I would expect out of a company like Nintendo versus what you're always going to get with indies, which is, yes, plenty of nice little ideas, also needing a little bit more time to test, but this is just one guy's project that he's been working on for 3 years, so kind of understandable why it's already out the door.
Yeah.
Wesley, your angle on it was you want to see good strategy games on iOS systems, so like the iPad.
Yeah. So you started seeing this recently, and so like strategy games, like the hardcore strategy game market is very different than the core market for gamers. Like, it's not atypical for games to release at like $80 or $90 in this market, and people still buy them, and that's just what they expect. And so in the last couple of years, you've seen a big rise in these really deep strategy games. Like, I like to point to the Shenandoah games that started with Battle of the Bulge, and now they have a few more. But anyway, it's just like these really deep strategy experiences with, like, you know, the little chits on the screen and like a map and room things. And it's an experience that works very well on the iPad, just in the same way that board games do. Like, the feel and the movement really work. And I hope that more large strategy games come out for the platform. And I will pay $15 for them, and I will be okay with it.
And how about you, Jerry? I think you said more shmups.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of comes back a little bit to what I said about games that are mechanics-focused first. That genre is very much all about that. There are shmups with game or with stories, and, I mean, they're all almost hilariously terrible. But we've started to see a few more of those. There's been a couple that have come out in the last year, actually on the PC of all places. But I just, that's a genre, it's weird. That's a genre of game I'm not good at and have never been good at, but I still really love playing regardless. Yeah, I'd really like to see more of those, because those are games that really are about mechanics first and about, you know, practice and persistence to get really good at them. They're games designed to be played over and over again as opposed to sort of one and done. That's a genre I'd like to, I hope its resurgence continues for sure.
All right. Now, lastly, I think we do have time for this last item, which me and Jerry both kind of shared, was New Bloody Ideas, which, Jerry, I think you were just, in general, new ideas, either mechanically or just IP.
Yeah.
For me, it's more a specific desire of, right now, Microsoft has a lot of exclusive games. And not just, like, I mean, the new Tomb Raider, sure, but they have a couple exclusive games that I have my eye on. I'm still going to get a PS4 next year because, and the biggest reason, because I don't necessarily trust Microsoft yet. With the 360, they got a lot of people to buy their system. They did well putting out a bunch of new IP at the start, but they didn't really put the effort into it that Sony manages to do, and especially no one puts effort like Nintendo. So I'd love to see. Microsoft's got a bunch of exclusives coming out now because a lot of them rely on third-party developers. You don't know how many are going to stick around on just the Xbox One. Everyone already knows the. Well, I believe everyone knows. I believe it's a fact. Tomb Raider is only exclusive to Xbox One for a limited time, so you probably will still get on the PS4. And so, like, there's a new Platinum game coming out on the Xbox One. Who knows if that won't be released on the PS4 sometime later? Like, that's the big concern I have, because it's very much third party that they're focusing on. And once they've sold enough systems, who's to say they're not going to still just rely on one or two properties to keep selling because they happen to sell well enough. So, and even with these new properties, like, again, Nintendo, I can count on making something quality. Sony, tail end of PS2, they released God of War. Tail end of PS3, they released The Last of Us. They are always investing in new intellectual property, as well as their constant franchises like Killzone. But I also expect them to put, like, not Nintendo level efforts of care, but more care than I expect out of Microsoft, considering some of what they released during the 360. But granted, at the same time frame, Sony's unique properties weren't always good either. So it could just be I'm currently biased against Microsoft, but I don't trust them right now. So if they can prove me wrong and have a consistent number of good properties throughout this system's lifespan, then I will probably pick it up as soon as I can for those exclusives, because I want to play them. Otherwise, I'll be willing to say bye-bye, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, when I said new ideas, it was basically for me is that I just want to see more new stuff come out sort of in all regards. I mean, I heard an interesting theory a while ago on I forget what podcast it was, but talking about how one of the reasons that we haven't seen a lot of new stuff for the new machines come out this year in terms of, like, not established franchises and things like that is that there was a couple of years there when a lot of people in and out of the games industry were wondering if consoles were still relevant and that, you know, if tablets and phones weren't taking it all over, and that apparently a lot of the business end of things was very apprehensive about whether these new consoles were going to sell at all and still be a viable business. So they kind of waited and said, well, we'll make our Assassin's Creeds and our Call of Duties and our safe ideas, but we're going to wait and see what happens with these things. And then the machines came out and they actually are selling better than their last gen counterparts did. They're actually doing extremely well. And they were like, oh crap, people actually still want this stuff. Let's green light a bunch of games. And they have green lit a bunch of games, but because AAA stuff takes 2 to 3 years at a minimum to make, we're not going to hear about any of it for a little while. And, I hope that's true, and I hope a lot of the stuff that's greenlit isn't just another one of franchise X that you're familiar with. I hope it's new IPs and new ideas, and that we see more of that, because I do think that even if this year's Assassin's Creed didn't come out broken, you know, the sales of the new Call of Duty are showing that even when you do innovate somewhat in old series, eventually they will, you know, they will die off, and something's got to be there to replace them. So I hope we see a lot of that this year. I hope we get a lot of new announcements in 2015 of stuff that's coming that's going to make everybody kind of go, whoa, that's neat. That's my hope anyway.
All right. Sounds good for the most part. I mean, I agree. I mean, I always want to see new ideas. And, of course, I like to see old ideas, too. I mean, the greatest paradox of games is they're constantly going to say, we want new ideas, and then complain when they don't see sequels to the ideas that they love. Because that's just in video games.
Yeah.
I don't want sequels to everything. I just want sequels to the things that I want.
Exactly. Why are we getting another Just Dance? Nobody cares about that. If nobody cared, it wouldn't be profitable.
Yeah. People care, just not the people that we talk to on a regular basis.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a good wish list. I don't see any reason why the games industry can't deliver on anything that we've asked for.
No, it's easy. Just get more people, and make more widgets. It's easy. I mean, you all the games have to be as good, and people will step up and buy them in droves, right? Right?
Yep. Yep. That's exactly what will happen.
Absolutely. Everybody gets tons of money. All the executives get their golden yachts. Gamers get tons of new ideas. Everybody's happy. Done. We've solved it.
Yep. Just call me a video games consultant now. I will get paid for doing nothing but telling you how the business industry will turn out.
Perfect.
All right. But thank you guys for listening. That was our Christmas wish list. Whether you celebrate Christmas or not, I hope you do have a happy holidays. And we are going to be coming on to the new year on our next episode, which should be roughly the first week of 2015. It'll be soonish. That is going to be our own personal gaming resolutions, so where we kind of turn this around on ourselves and see what we think we ought to start doing in regards to games. So I hope you enjoyed listening. As usual, I'm Chris Cesarano. You can find more of my material at www.gamertag.net. Go to youtube.com/user/RamblePack64, I believe. Should still be the address. It might be different now. But you do that, or you search RamblePack64, and you will find I have a new video up. It's about Remember Me. It is over 30 minutes long, but it is probably my best produced video to date. I'm really proud of it.
It's really good.
thank you. Thank you for kissing my ass.
I like it.
But just watch it, and also watch through the credits and leave a comment on what you want me. There are three games up for voting for me to analyze next time. Thus far, nobody's made a vote, so leave a comment on the YouTube page or go to facebook.com/RamblePack64 and leave a comment. Say, I want you to analyze this game. I'm not going to tell you which ones they are because I want you to find out for yourself. Watch through the credits because I even put little nice little treasures after the credits sometimes that you should watch. So I've got that going. Jerry, tell us about what you've been doing.
All my stuff can always be found at geekbravado.com. I posted several written reviews, which I've been trying to do more of for fun the last little while. I actually am recording the last episode. It's partially done today. I have to finish it. I'm recording the last episode of my Startopia playthrough, which has been a lot of fun. It's not confirmed yet, but I may actually be doing an interview with one of the original designers of that game, who is still around, still in the video game industry, which I think could be a lot of fun. So if people are a fan of that game, they're going to want to check that out. And I might have another video product review going up soon, which is going to be of the Cronus Max device, which is a device for it's basically an input thing for controllers that allow you to make different controllers work on different platforms. It's kind of an enthusiast product, but going to be doing that. And been doing retro flashback stuff and a bunch of other things lately. So that's, if you go to geekbravado.com, there's links to all that stuff there.
All right. And Wesley,
yes,
you have your World War One podcast.
I have a World War One podcast at historyofthegreatwar.com. I don't do any video game things because I'm too busy herding druffalos in the hinterlands.
Nice.
I like it. All right, and lastly, the music selection today is, of course, Jingle Bells, but the heavy metal rendition as performed by a heavy metal band, Celador. That is Celladore. So, all right, guys, thank you very much for listening, and, of course, thank you guys for joining me. All right, everyone have a good night, and Merry Christmas to all. Ho, ho, ho.
Have a good holiday, all.